This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Welcome, everybody. Monday afternoon, time to go beyond the box score. Advanced stats from simple people. Still working on the tagline, but that's what I have for week three as we recap Sunday's action with some of the statistics that just don't show up and that you probably don't even know about maybe in some cases, and then hopefully Jacob and Dan can educate you a little bit today. I'm Adam Azer with Jacob Gibbs and Dan Schneier. We'll talk about yards per route run and target rate and backfield snap counts and third down rates and all those good things, but also just general buy low, sell high, and is what's wrong with Tom Brady. Of course, we'll talk about Sunday Night Football. All right, guys. What'd you think of Sunday Night Football, Jacob? 11-10. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't waste any time or energy watching that game, I'll be honest.
What? Why not?
I'm not somebody who like has to watch the games. I think that that is kind of a destructive habit, especially
really?
When it's as bad as that game.
Oh, no. I have to. I love watching the games, man, especially all the Cortland Sutton targets in the world. That was exciting. Came down to the wire for me in one of my leagues. I needed that pick six. I came up 2 points short. The Broncos DST was not quite good enough. So, yeah, I was into it. That's a good thing about fantasy. It turns a garbage game into something exciting. Dan, the 49ers lost Trent Williams, and the Chargers lost Rashawn Slater. So, but speaking in this game here, I had the advanced stat. It was great, and I can't find it now. I will find it. But they averaged something like 6 yards per play in the first half and something like 4 yards per play in the second half, and Trent Williams was a big difference maker. When he left, the offense really struggled.
Yeah, I'm the opposite of Jacob. I don't miss games to the point where I do watch like the replays of games. Now I have YouTube TV, so it tapes a lot of games, but I also watch it on Game Pass. I am, to a fault, an eye test believer. I like to go by what I see. I especially think, I like to mix it in. Like all the advanced stats that we gain from having True Media, from having people like Jacob on staff who do an excellent job digging them and uncovering them. I use that all within the context of also the game, what I watch. And, my thoughts on this game were twofold. One, everyone, announcing, oh my God, maybe this Jimmy G, this Trey Lance injury and Jimmy G coming into the starting quarterback spot is good for all the 49ers fantasy players. I think they got to take a step back and reconsider that. Jimmy Garoppolo, I thought, had one of the worst games I've seen by any quarterback this season. I know it doesn't show up as much in the box score, but he missed a wide open Deebo Samuel touchdown and a beautiful design by Kyle Shanahan to get him one-on-one against the linebacker, Josie Jewell. He hit the pass, but he had to stop for it, Samuel, and it was no touchdown. He missed a few open reads for touchdowns, too. There was one late in the game on a Deebo Samuel release from the slot vert. So this is a quarterback who, from a clean pocket, misses a lot of targets from a ball placement standpoint and has no mobility. So I think he's worse for the offense. That's one of my takeaways.
No.
The other one, yeah, I do.
Well, he might be worse for the overall offense, but he is going to throw for a lot more yards than Trey Lance
so.
Was.
I
absolutely.
I know everyone says that.
But not like this is a guessing game. We already know what Jimmy Garoppolo is.
But we don't know anything about Trey Lance. We had such a small sample.
But he wasn't going to throw enough.
He can't throw for a lot of yards.
He wasn't going to throw enough.
Well, how do you
This
know?
Is a rusher. He's a running quarterback.
That's not why they drafted him.
He's a 1,000-yard rusher.
No, they didn't draft him for that. When he's early in the system, I agree. And we'll never know because he's injured. And there's a lot of people taking victory laps now on Lance's demise, quote unquote, with a small sample size. But as he got more comfortable in that offense, I actually thought he would add more to the passing game, which was one of my big beliefs in the offseason. We'll never know. Anyway, back to the other side of the ball. Man, oh, man, that Broncos offense. We knew it was going to take time with Russ learning a new system that had no semblance of what he had run in Seattle and learned all the terminology there for so long. But with Hackett too, as the play caller and as the coach, it's just, it's not what you want. And I think it's going to continue to take time there. We talked last week. Do I trust Brady or Russell Wilson? I went Brady. I think he edged him slightly in points, right?
I think it was 9. Yeah. Yes, he did. He did. He scored 12 points. Wilson scored 8. I had like an unofficial Wilson versus Wentz bet, and I think I won by 2. Like Wilson 8, Wentz 6. I mean, first of all, the stat I gave earlier was it's even more dramatic. First half, the 49ers averaged 6.2 yards per play. Second half, they averaged 3.7 yards per play. Wow. And left tackle Trent Williams did miss most of the second half. And this is a tough team to lose your stud left tackle, one of the best in the business. The Broncos were all over Garoppolo. Jerry Jeudy only played 59% of the snaps. He came into the game hurt. He was barely started. That ended up being a good play by fantasy managers. He played 89% of the snaps in week one, 59% of the snaps in week two. So Wilson did not exactly have his best weapons out there. Just Sutton basically doing all the work, 8 catches, 97 yards. But Wilson is the story here. The other Wilson, by the way, just encouraging thing there for Jeff Wilson. He played 73% of the snaps, had a really good game, caught 3 passes, had a late fumble that crushed them. But from a fantasy standpoint, yeah, pretty good. Good usage anyway, completely dominating the running back carries. Let's talk about Russell Wilson here, guys. And do you think he's a buy low or do you think he's a bust at this point? Jacob, you can have the first word. Wilson scoring 8 points. So that's 19.8 points, 13.1 points, and 8 points in 3 games. Jacob, go ahead. Russell Wilson.
I just, like we've talked about, each passing week that the offense continues to look this way, like I continue to get more worried and think that he might be a bust. I think, you know, both him and Brady are going to be better. We talked about him last week. I think they could be buy lows, but I don't have much confidence in it right now. I really don't have much on Russ. I would mention on Jeudy that he ran 30 routes. So 30 routes for him, 39 for Sutton. I think they just kind of were keeping him off the field when they could, because he got banged up last week. So why have him in there run blocking? Right. I think it'd be better for him going forward.
I love the connection with Sutton right now. It's exactly what I was banking on.
Even though you were tilting off a bit last night on Twitter with the all caps, I need more from Sutton moment. That was fun.
I needed more from the offensive line. They weren't really
more
doing
from
much.
Everything. Yeah.
What did you think about the running backs here? Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Want to get a word on Wilson?
Just a quick thing. I actually am buying low on Wilson. I'm not expecting this to turn around right away. That's kind of my point. It's going to take time to learn the system here, but he was an incredible defensive play by the defensive back away from a 75-yard touchdown to Jerry Jeudy on a perfectly thrown deep post there. And then on the 3rd and 4 earlier in the game that bogged down a drive, Jerry Jeudy runs a great route and gets open, and Wilson just doesn't have the timing down. He doesn't have the connection. Similar earlier, Jeudy ran a choice route and he broke inside on an inbreaker, and Russell Wilson threw the ball outside. That's going to take time. And I think once they get that down, they're going to be a much better passing offense.
Yeah, I think overall, I mean, I was talking about this on the show yesterday, but think about who are the quarterbacks so far that have just been much worse than we thought. The ones that come to mind, Brady. I don't think Brady's playing poorly. He just has no weapons.
Oh, you mean just worse? Okay, gotcha. I thought you meant fantasy.
Who's playing like crap?
Who's playing like crap?
There are 5 that come to mind, and all of them have new teams or coaches. And they're Fields, Wilson, Wentz, Matt Ryan, and Baker Mayfield. And Ryan is maybe not, I don't know if he belongs on that list, but all these guys are playing. I think Wentz has been playing like crap, personally. I mean, I know he had 2 30-point fantasy games, but it takes time. These are new systems, new teams, new surroundings. Right. I don't think it's a coincidence. And for Fields, it's a new coaching staff, obviously.
I think you could throw Daniel Jones in that mix as well. I know the completion percentage is high, but the air yards is pathetically low. The yards per attempt is pathetically low. They're just asking him to basically operate easy inbreakers off of RPOs. So right now he would probably be in the mix as well.
The word of the day is inbreakers, by the way, if you are playing at home. Javonte Williams.
What's an inbreaker, Adam?
It's an in breaking record. Give me a break.
Yeah, well, you didn't know anti-fragility, so yeah.
I didn't know anti-fragility. I do thank you.
You still and after Jacob not knowing, you doubled down on how much you hated it. That was the part that I thought you could have done a little better on, the double down. You could have been like, you know what? I get it now, and I like it.
Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon, very even in the touches. I think 18 to 17. Melvin Gordon gets the goal line touchdown. After a week, Jacob, last week, week two, it looked like, you know, it was all Javonte, basically. So what do you think? Is this going to be a seesaw all year in terms of role?
I hope not. It was definitely a bummer, especially what really got me was the routes run. Javonte and Melvin each ran 13 routes on 40 total dropbacks. So in week two, Javonte ran 20 routes on 35 dropbacks. We saw 9 for Melvin Gordon, only 5 for Mike Boone. This past week, it was 13 Javonte, 13 Melvin Gordon, and 11 for Mike Boone. That's so gross. That's terrible for fantasy.
Everyone is a bust this year, except for like 3 players. Everyone is a bust. Okay, that's going to do it for our recap of that game. And if you're watching right now, I have a Giants shirt on because Dan and I are going to the game tonight. And underneath my Giants shirt, I've got a Fantasy Football Today shirt on.
Ooh, I like that.
You can get a Fantasy Football Today shirt. You can get a Fantasy Football Today mug, a glass, a hat, a hoodie. Awesome stuff. Go to our merchandise store. Go to the CBS Sports store and get t-shirts, mugs, sweatpants, laser engraved pint glasses, hats, water bottles, and more to remind your buddies how you got the inside scoop to crush them in fantasy. Right now, Fantasy Football Today listeners will get 20% off their order when they use this code exclusive to this podcast, FantasyFootball20, during checkout. FantasyFootball20 is the code. And the best way to go there is you could just Google CBS Sports Store Fantasy Football Today. You can just do a search, or there's a link in the episode description in iTunes or, you know, wherever you're listening, and there's a link in the episode description on YouTube. But if you want to just Google CBSSports.com store or CBS Sports Store Fantasy Football Today, it'll take you there, and use the promo code FantasyFootball20 to get 20% off your purchase. We do have some big news today. DeAndre Swift could miss some time with a shoulder injury. Jamal Williams is 70% rostered. And we have a whole waiver wire show coming up tomorrow, but is Jamal Williams ahead of Alexander Mattison, Khalil Herbert, just because of time frame, Dan?
Yeah, he is easily my number one target. I mean, Jamal Williams has, year to date, the most snaps, targets, and total touches inside the red zone. Total, he has 8 touches there and 11 snaps in the red zone.
Wow.
I think given how dominant that Detroit Lions offensive line has been, especially in the run game, he's, to me, a potential RB1 top 12 weekly play if Swift is out. Like, is there a possibility they start to mix in other running backs? Maybe. But ultimately, they trust him on third downs. They trust him in the red zone. In red zone, they trust him between the 20s. Why is he not an RB, a top 12 RB with that kind of offensive line if Swift is out? So he, to me, is somebody I'm willing to, depending on the Swift injury and what kind of timetable we get, I will be willing to dump a lot of budget on Jamal Williams.
I hope you can get him. He's 70% roster. He's obviously a shallow league kind of thing, but Jamal Williams has 696 carries in his career. How many of them do you think have gone for more than 25 yards out of 696?
More than 25 yards?
Yeah.
7.
Dan?
25 yards. He's definitely not a 25-yard rusher. I'm going to put it at... Because this is an Azer stat, and those usually either involve trick questions or... like massive, like
give me a number.
One.
You're right. One run in his entire career.
I know the Azer stats too well.
He stinks.
I can pinpoint Azer stats.
I'm just all I'm saying. He's just, you know, he's like
but he's
like DeAndre Swift.
We're not expecting that.
DeAndre Swift has 250 yard carries this year
already. Yeah.
Jamal Williams is 0 in 696 runs. Mac Jones has a severe high ankle sprain.
How many did James Conner have last year? I'd be curious, because he was an unbelievable fit. You know, frame of reference.
Yeah, but he averaged 3-point-something yards per carry last year. If you want to look at his career.
Conner you're talking about?
Yeah.
But I'm just saying he had such a good fantasy season for us
year. You're right.
Had him, despite not really being able to do anything from a breakaway standpoint.
It's a good point. He's a must-have player. I'm not disputing that. Mac Jones, severe high ankle sprain. He could be out a while. Rashawn Slater is out. Yeah, Rashawn Slater's out for the season for the Chargers. That's their star second-year left tackle. Jacob, interested in buying low on Justin Herbert, or are you genuinely concerned, or both?
Yeah, I am concerned. I don't like the way the Chargers are handling it. Like, I just am staying away from it. Like, why the hell was he? Why was he in at the end of the game?
He said he wanted to be. He said he wanted to be in with his teammates, and he didn't want to quit on them.
Sure. That's decisions. So asinine.
Yeah, look, I think that obviously this is a huge loss, and they're also, I don't know how long Corey Linsley's out there center. I'm guessing not that much longer, but this is the lowest I think his value is going to be, possibly, his lowest his value is going to be all year, and you kind of need a difference-making quarterback because there are four or five teams in your league that have one, and this might be your chance to get Herbert. I still think he can be great. I mean, Burrow was great last year with a terrible offensive line. It's a problem. Maybe it limits his upside, but I think you shouldn't judge. Like, he needs Keenan Allen back, and hopefully that'll happen next week.
Right. My issue is Allen needs Allen back, but also, like, just from watching the Chargers, I decided to watch yesterday's game on the replay today. No Giants game to work with, so I had to watch some other stuff. And yeah, there's a massive difference if you watch that game when Slater is in the game versus when he comes out. It's almost like an offense that can't move the ball, but at the same time, that's to be expected in game when an injury like that happens. They'll obviously scheme around it by having people chip and things of that nature, but they don't have any offensive tackle depth. So they are going to have to take receivers out of routes to use in pass protection. That's never a good thing. But my biggest issue watching the Chargers this year, man, maybe it's because Keenan Allen is out. I just don't see a lot of vertical separation with the receiver group. And I don't really see a lot of separation in general because I'm pretty disappointed in what I've seen out of Mike Williams with that receiver group. So it's just like now he has problems in the offensive line, receivers who can't separate vertically. I just don't know if that's a buy low for me. And Eckler doesn't have a single run of 10 plus yards this year. Like, that's not what Eckler's supposed to be.
All good points. Joe Mixon is worse than Eckler. He has an ankle injury too, and he's averaging 2.8 yards per carry. And he has something like 9 runs for negative yardage and 8 for no gain. I was reading on cleveland.com today. I might have mixed those two numbers up, but Mixon's got an ankle issue, so you might want to look at Samaje Perine because they're playing on Thursday, and they're playing against the Dolphins, who may not have Tua Tagovailoa. Those will be big ones. I mean, I would think he's going to play. It's a back injury, but I'm getting some news right here. Just going to read in a second. But yeah, Tua and Mixon in jeopardy for the Thursday game at Cincinnati. And some Bucks news here. They will have Evans back this week. Julio Jones is expected to play, and not sure yet on Chris Godwin. All right, let's look at some snap count stuff and more. Jacob, is there anything you wanted to point out? You want me to go through it? Or, you know, you haven't talked much, so I want to throw it to you.
No, the only real note I have here is on Kamara. We'll get to him. But his route involvement rate was a lot more encouraging than what we have seen. Obviously, he was a little bit injured earlier, but it was really low in week one. But it was up to 62%, which is more in line with last year, 65%. So that's encouraging.
And his snapshot, I think this was the first game in the last 2 years now, two seasons, that he played 70% of the snaps with Mark Ingram playing. So I know it was a disappointing game for Kamara. He fumbled, and Ingram scored the touchdown, but the snaps were great. I guess the route involvement was great. And he actually has drawn a target this year on 1/3 of his routes without Michael Thomas on the field, and only 22.6% of his routes with Michael Thomas on the field. It's a small sample size, but something to keep an eye on. Dan, anything jump out to you?
From all the snap counts, I think the one thing that I would say stood out the most is just this Clyde Edwards-Helaire role. It's not where we want it to be, and yet he's still scoring so many fantasy points because of the red zone touchdowns. That screams typically a sell high type situation with Edwards-Helaire, and I can get on board with that depending on what you're receiving in return. The question becomes, though, not is this sustainable, because that's a stupid thing to say from a touchdown standpoint, but this is still one of the best offenses in the NFL, regardless of where they're at right now. I think it's only going to get better as those receivers get on the same page with Patrick Mahomes. So it still is, you're still trading away the primary red zone guy. I know they mix in McKinnon there and sometimes Pacheco. So I'm not as sold on that, but I did think it's interesting that he hasn't really stood out there. And I also think it's interesting that Eli Moore is playing more snaps than Garrett Wilson, but Garrett Wilson is out producing him. So I know that's not what Jacob wants to hear, probably, as the main Eli Moore truther. And I love Eli Moore too, but it's possible that the Jets just drafted a better overall receiver, at least as far as drawing targets goes, with Joe Flacco, I should say.
Yeah. What do you think, Jacob? And what do you think about Zach Wilson, who is most likely going to start this week for them?
Yeah, I mean, Zach Wilson has actually been worse for Elijah Moore when in the splits that we have seen, you know, throughout Moore's career. So I don't know. Anything is better than what we've seen so far. truly, like Elijah Moore has the highest average route depth of any player in the NFL. And Flacco, up until this week, really has not been looking downfield at all. And so it could get better. Garrett Wilson has not been better at drawing targets throughout any, you know, extended sample size that we've seen on the two, but Garrett Wilson is really good. I was really, really high on him as well. I just didn't think that he was going to come in and take things away from Moore like he has, but like it was definitely within the range of possibilities that he's good enough to do that. And that's what we've seen so far. It could just be what continues to happen. What's really interesting to me on the Jets is the running back situation. We saw in week two, they played Ty Johnson a ton, and I think Breece Hall only ran like seven routes. But in week three, Ty Johnson only played one snap. Breece Hall ran 27 routes compared to 19 for Michael Carter. Breece Hall was in for 10 of 16 two-minute drill routes, and he had 11 third-down routes compared to just two for Michael Carter. So if he can get, I have no idea what to expect because they've just been all over the place with it week to week.
Right.
But if Breece can get those passing down reps, that's really exciting. He's not someone who was targeted at a high rate in college. He just had a massive, you know, overall route run, total. But so far through 3 weeks, he has the highest target per route run rate of any player in the NFL. He's been targeted on 35% of his routes.
So that's Breece Hall we're talking about here. And for the first time this season, he actually outsnapped Michael Carter by only two snaps. But, you know, he is perhaps closing the gap, perhaps earning a bigger role, or perhaps we have no idea what's going to happen in week four. It's, you know,
Wilson,
I keep drawing parallels to this year's Jets backfield to last year's Broncos backfield, but I might as well just draw parallels to this year from this year's Jets backfield to this year's Broncos backfield, where week by week we don't know. So we talked about this last night with Heath and Dave. Do you think that the Breece Hall breakout is coming? My argument against it was I just don't think Michael Carter's going away, and it's going to be like Melvin Gordon and Javonte last season. I don't know that the true must-start breakout is coming. Maybe the flex breakout is coming or is already here. I don't know. But, Jacob, you got the first word. Do you think the Breece Hall breakout is coming?
I think he's looked really, really good. Like his efficiency metrics, his ability to draw targets, everything that we've seen when he's been given an opportunity to play has been much better than I expected. So if the opportunity increases, it's definitely possible. But like you said, as long as Carter's healthy, I think he is going to be involved. The team, he's the heartbeat of the offense, you know, like the team really likes him and he's an important part of what they do. So I would be surprised if we see a true breakout into like RB1, even, you know, high end RB2 territory for Breece.
I'm going to go with no also, not because of Breece Hall, though. I mean, this is a prospect who came in very similarly from an athletic comp standpoint to Jonathan Taylor and Saquon Barkley. His film at Iowa State is phenomenal. One of the most patient one-cut runners, perfect fit for the system. All reasons I liked him, but like you said, Adam, how can you break out in a Jets offense where Michael Carter is not going to lose his role? And the bigger issue for me here is I just think this offense from a volume standpoint in the passing game is going to look so much different when Zach Wilson gets on the field. I don't think they're going to be as efficient in the passing game. Unfortunately, I have to say that about Zach Wilson. I don't think they're going to pass as much to the running backs. I think that's going to take a massive drop off.
Did not do that at all last year.
Hell out of me. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's a veteran move. Joe Flacco is a veteran. We'll check down to the backs a lot. That's something he goes through his progressions. He gets there. So that's number one concern for me, the target volume for the running backs once they put in the second year quarterback with very few starts under his belt.
All right, I'll give you a few more things here, and then we'll move on to our five big topics, which is going to be a lot of quarterback talk. Detroit cornerback Jeff Okuda. I think this is his third year or fourth year. He's coming back from an Achilles injury. He's a former top pick, top five pick out of Ohio State. And I hope he was top five. I hope my mom, he might have been like, I thought he was three.
He was close. I think he was three.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, I just looked just now on PFF. They have him as like the 60th best cornerback in coverage grade, but everybody's raving about him and he is shutting people down. Devontae Smith in week one, Justin Jefferson in week three. Who do they play in week two?
They played the Commanders or no,
Washington. Yeah. They played Washington.
Yeah.
Right?
Commanders.
Yeah. Was it McLaurin? So whatever. Okuda has been terrific this year, and he could be a shutdown cornerback that we have to pay attention to. He was basically shadowing Justin Jefferson yesterday, and got some help, but really did a great job. Let's see. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's been good to see him come around. He was a top prospect. He really struggled at the beginning of his NFL career, and now he's taken well to that system.
Okay, end zone target leaders through three games. Devontae.
I was just going to say one thing I wanted to get to before we got there, maybe, but I didn't want you to lose your train of thought, was we didn't touch enough on the Romeo Dubs outing, I feel like. That was really, I thought, one of the bigger takeaways from this week.
Big waiver wire priority for you, Romeo Dubs.
Oh, yeah, Dubs. I don't know why I still call him Dubs, but that'll be something I'll improve on.
We'll give your fantasy team some Dubs.
Yeah, exactly.
W's, wins.
I'm curious to get Jacob's take on this, like if this is sustainable, because everything we saw yesterday was this is the first real sign of any wide receiver in that on that Packers team showing off any kind of, you know, ability to dominate targets, ability to, you know, he played a ton of snaps for them. It wasn't like they were taking him in and out, putting him in on certain situations. Is this sustainable, Jacob, once they get healthier at receiver?
I hope so. I think, you know, the route involvement, the snap rate and everything was great yesterday. What I will bring up on Dobbs is that his average depth of target is 4.4 yards, which is just really strange, given like how we saw him use in the preseason and what I saw like in his collegiate data. I don't know if that's going to continue or not, but like he has drawn a lot of targets, but they haven't necessarily been high volume targets. He does not have, I think his area yardage share is like 15% or something.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for the detour here. End zone target leaders. Nah, he's worth talking about. Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson have 7 apiece. Jamar Chase has 6. Stephon Diggs and DK Metcalf and Justin Jefferson have 5. Those are your primary leaders in end zone targets. Davante, Garrett Wilson. I mean, Garrett Wilson is in that company right now. With Davante Adams, Jamar Chase, Stephon Diggs, DK Metcalf, and Justin Jefferson. Still have Allen Robinson high on there. He has 4. So if you're holding out hope for him, that's, you know, the reason why. Zay Jones and Mac Hollins are actually on that list, and they're waiver wire wide receivers that we'll discuss tomorrow. Ramondre Stevenson played 16 more snaps than Damian Harris, ran 14 more routes than Damian Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Treylon Burks played a career high season high, 69% of the snaps. Cam Akers let me just give one more and then I'll throw it to you. Cam Akers and Darrell Henderson played the same amount of snaps, and they ran the same amount of routes. They combined for 1 target. Akers had 12 carries. Henderson had 4. And Akers fumbled at the goal line, but his coach, Sean McVay, said that if they had run more plays, all they did was kneel it down after that fumble. If they had gone back out there, Akers would have been out there. He wanted to give him some confidence to say he's still his guy, but or whatever, something like that. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, just on Treylon, it was a season-high snap rate, 69%, which is great. But I think more importantly, he ran around on 27 of 28 dropbacks. So they were clearly getting him out there when they were passing the ball. Yeah, he had more routes around than Robert Woods, who had 25 compared to 27 for Burks.
And last thing here, among teams who have played 3 games, which is almost everyone, the Baltimore Ravens have the fewest running back rush attempts. And this is where they've ranked in the last 4 seasons in running back rush attempts. 9th, 7th, 30th, and now, after tonight, it will be 32nd.
Wow.
So they have changed their identity. I don't know if J.K. Dobbins' health will change that, but they are Lamar Jackson's team. I mean, they have been, but he is the guy running the ball for them. They just don't hand it off.
And that's a great point by you, because a lot of people expected going into the season that there would be all this regression around Mark Andrews and this Baltimore passing game. But no one really considered maybe they just trust Lamar Jackson's development as a passer. And he's looked damn good as a passer this season, despite, in my opinion, not a great setup. Besides Rashad Bateman, no one creates any kind of separation with the receivers. And weirdly enough, at least to me, Rashad Bateman isn't even playing all the snaps. I find the whole Bateman coming off the field thing, I don't know why that's the case right now, and hopefully that'll change moving forward, because it's obviously impacted his target volume in some ways at least. But what he's done with that receiver core right now, with an offensive line that's just not even close to what it used to be, I think they're moving forward in a direction where they realize the best way for them to move the ball is through Lamar Jackson.
On the Baltimore thing, I will say just a small note. On first downs, their dropback rate was only 40% in week 3. It had been 53% and 60% the 2 weeks prior. That's the only dropback rate that I noticed that stood out. Like neutral situations was about the same. The first half dropback rate was about the same. Their overall dropback rate was about the same. So it could be nothing, but like if you are looking for any underlying data point that might, you know, suggest that they are going to be more run heavy, on first downs, they were more run heavy in week 3.
Okay. And we are going to take a break. When we come back, we have our five big topics. But first, I want to look at the YouTube poll, which is really interesting.
What is it?
Schaefer's getting better and better at these. What is your favorite 90s kids sports movie?
Oh.
Is it A, The Sandlot, B, Little Giants, C, The Mighty Ducks, or D, Space Jam? The results.
Wow.
When we come back, Sandlot, Little Giants, Mighty Ducks, or Space Jam, what is your favorite 90s kids
sports
movie?
We need to
get our
takes too.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what we're here for. We will be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back. Okay, five big topics start with Tom Brady, but big topic number zero is this poll on YouTube here. Okay, what's your favorite 90s kids sports movie? Is it The Sandlot, Little Giants, The Mighty Ducks, or Space Jam? It is a runaway right now. I won't tell you what it is. All right, Jacob, you can go first.
Well, it's important to bring up that I was born in 1994. So wow. A lot of these I've seen, but they weren't necessarily nostalgic movies. What came to mind for me was Like Mike, but I just looked it up. It actually came out in 2002.
Okay, I've never even heard of that movie. So
don't even try to mix that in with these four.
Yeah, I know.
That really is a disaster.
I'm a basketball guy, so I'll go with Space Jam, I guess.
Okay, Dan?
This is one of the toughest polls Thomas has ever created. I don't think we'll ever get a tougher poll, considering to me, all four are pretty much on the same. It's true, dude. These are four elite level movies. I mean, how do you even pick?
It's a good one.
Most people would expect me to pick Little Giants out of bias, but I'm not going to go Little Giants. You know, my pick actually is Mighty Ducks. I love the Mighty Ducks, and I've seen that movie the most. I'm not even sure original is my favorite because 2 and 3 are so good.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
Just stop. You were doing great. You were really doing great. You were hitting a home run.
D2 is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, yes, D2 is fun, but it's a stupid movie with the Bash Brothers at the end going crazy and stuff. Like D1.
Who doesn't love the Bash Brothers?
I do love the Bash Brothers. It's not as good of a movie as the original Mighty Ducks. The original Mighty Ducks is great. Mighty Ducks was also my answer. I'm just going to stop you before you embarrass yourself anymore. Mighty Ducks was also my answer. But we are getting our butts kicked by The Sandlot, which has 50% of the vote.
You know, though, the problem with that is it's probably skewed toward an older audience is all going Sandlot, right?
No, I think Mighty Ducks and Sandlot would be.
Okay.
I think
baseball is a bit of an older sport. That's my kind of my
I think again. I just stop. You were doing great, man. All right.
I really knew that one wasn't going
to. Let's get to our five big topics. Jacob, you get the first word. This is from Tyler C. Is there any hope for Tom Brady this season?
Yeah, I think so for sure. Right, like offense gets healthier. I think things could definitely turn around. Like we talked about last week, we're a little bit worried about the dropback rate there, going a little bit more run heavy. And there are definitely reasons for concern, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if he turns things around.
I think he's going to be great.
Yeah.
I would not have ranked him high if I knew he didn't have Chris Godwin, Julio Jones, or Mike Evans, which was the case last week. And Evans got thrown out 2 weeks ago, yesterday. Evans got thrown out 8 days ago, and he's had Chris Godwin for almost none of the season. He's had Julio Jones for one game. No chance. Things are going to turn around very soon for Tom Brady. I do think he may not have the ceiling that he had. And this is what we talked about when we noticed just how run heavy they were. It hurts his ceiling. But, you know, we'll get into it in the second question, which is also about quarterbacks. You can't be bad at quarterback. You can't. And it's hard this year because there's only like five good quarterbacks right now. that'll change, I think. And I think Brady's going to be part of that change, Dan. I think there's a lot of hope for him.
Yeah, he's also a big-time buy-low for me for a multitude of reasons. One, you said it. They just don't look like right now they trust to let him throw the ball without these receivers on the field. I mean, look, you asked him yesterday to – Cole Beasley was on the field. This dude was signed days ago with zero chemistry, doesn't know the system, and he's expected to play on the field. And there were routes where it looked like Brady and Beasley weren't on the same page. That's not going to continue. And if you saw at the end of the game when they finally took the training wheels off and let him go into a tempo offense, he was throwing the ball really well, and he moved the ball all the way down the field for a touchdown. And so that's the type of thing that you can still get if they trust it. Now, I have been concerned about losing Bruce Arians because Bruce Arians was, I don't give a crap. I'm throwing the ball downfield early, often. I don't care how much we're leading by. I don't think that's going to be the same. So I don't think the ceiling is quite as high, but he's certainly going to get to a much higher level than he's been at once he has Godwin and Evans on the field. Julio is another story. I know he's going to try to play through this PCL. I don't trust that Julio is going to be able to stay healthy though for any like extended period of time.
Yeah. I just think he needs Godwin and Evans. And when he has that, he's going to be a must start quarterback basically.
Yep.
Even ran yesterday. Oh, I think that was called back, wasn't it? That run he had.
That was a fun run, though. That was a fun run.
All right. This is from Imtiaz Khan. The quarterback dead zone after the first six or so quarterbacks drafted. So, yeah, I had a long conversation with the guys about this on yesterday's show. But basically, the reason why we don't take Josh Allen in the first round is because we think Joe Burrow and Tom Brady and Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr and Trey Lance and I did. Like all those guys that we took in the mid rounds, not going to be as good, but they're still going to be awesome. And it has not played out. So far, it is an extremely shallow position, Jacob. How do you see the quarterback landscape shaping up going forward?
Yeah, I'm feeling really good in the leagues where I drafted Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, Tua, some of those, you know, mid-round guys because they've actually, you know, really produced well and seem set up to continue to do so. But yeah, it's basically like if you took one of the elite guys, you're set. And if not, you're kind of scrambling. It's kind of the same thing at tight end, honestly. Like both positions have been so ugly so far.
Right, but don't you buy it more with tight end? I think quarterback will end up being a deep position. I think there have been some extenuating circumstances. Like Dak is hurt. Mm-hmm. Brady's got these receivers out. I thought Stafford played a terrific game yesterday and got unlucky with two drop touchdown passes.
Such a slow pace in that game. It was just so hard to watch. Both those teams were just grind. Look at how many total plays the Rams had in that game on offense. It's unbearable almost to watch. That play clock is just draining to 2 seconds every play. It was hard to watch at times.
Well, all I'm saying is I have no hope.
You're 100% right.
I have no hope for tight ends. But I do have hope for these dead zone quarterbacks who have been
bad. Russ, too.
Bad
I think
so far.
Russ will get better, too.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, Rodgers is actually being, you know, he's not tearing it up, but he's playing really well, and he's been okay the last couple of weeks. I don't know. So, Jacob, I just want to press you on that again. Do you think there is a huge difference between Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, let's say Mahomes, and everyone else, Jacob?
Yeah, I want to think that we could see better days ahead for Kyler Murray, but I also just don't trust the coaching staff, the infrastructure there in Arizona at all.
That's part of our next question, actually.
Right. And then, yeah, I think Russ and Brady, I think your point of like comparing it to tight end is valid. Like there are more guys in that mid-range who are underperforming who I feel like have a chance of emerging and joining that elite tier at quarterback than at tight end. Like I feel a lot better about those guys than TJ Hawkinson or, you know, Pat Freiermuth, whoever you're drafting in that range of tight end. I think there's glimmers of hope for some of these quarterbacks still.
You can go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think there's a couple things working in play here. I mean, over the last two seasons, I believe Chris Towers did some good research on this. And quarterback scoring has been very, I don't want to say lopsided, but very top heavy now for two straight years. But over that same time span over the last 2 years, the best bet from an ADP value standpoint has been drafting a quarterback in the 9 to 12 range.
Yes.
That just doesn't seem likely to me like that's going to be the case anymore this year, Adam, as you brought up. Trey Lance already injured, right? Tom Brady might get back to a certain point. We're not certain on that. And Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott were the two other players within that 9 to 12 ADP range. And in two injuries, obviously. But right now, it's starting to feel like it's getting even more top heavy with the players you mentioned. The other thing that we have to consider, just overall right now, and I don't know if this will continue. I doubt it will. Scoring has been down big time in the NFL. It was 24 points per team. This is also courtesy of Chris Towers in our daily newsletter that you can get sent to your inbox every day for free. It was 5,500 words with advanced stats, snap counts, snap shares on every single game for every Monday morning. This is an amazing newsletter. You should literally all sign up for this if you enjoy the beyond the box score type stats and stuff. But anyway, scoring across the league was down from 24.0 points per game in weeks 1 to 2 last season to 21.4 this season. And then as we enter Monday Night Football, the league's only averaging 20.37 points per game in week 3. So that number went even further down. I think that's due to regress as well. And when that happens, there will be other quarterbacks who kind of can step into that range, hopefully.
It was a low scoring fantasy week for sure. A lot of really ugly scores. All right. Topic number 3 comes from C3P Joe. I like that. C3P Joe. Cardinals offense. That's all C3P Joe said. Cardinals offense. Dan, what's going on with the Cardinals offense?
I think Jacob alluded to a little bit of it, a little bit of what me and him are concerned about earlier. This is a really bad coaching staff. It's a really bad offensive system. They don't use pre-snap motion often. They didn't do a lot of things to make life easier for the quarterback. And ultimately, that's playing a big factor here. In addition to something we can't just overlook, which is one, the entire infrastructure of the team has been kind of crumpling in recent years. They haven't upgraded their offensive line at all, really. It's not a good offensive line, and they just lost Justin Pugh, their starting left guard, this week. That's only going to make things worse there. In addition to that, they don't really have any receivers they can trust outside of Marquise Brown right now. A.J. Green, I guess he was their starter. He went down. Greg Dortch is now playing the role they envisioned for Rondale Moore. So things will get better as those receivers get healthier. But there's still going to be this looming concern for me the rest of the season that Cliff Kingsbury is calling the plays and designing the offense, and that their offensive line is a crumpling infrastructure that's only getting worse via injury.
Yeah, 31st in pre-snap motion, 28th in play action. Like, they just, there are things that are like clearly like boost efficiency. They just don't do them.
Who's
32nd?
Who's 32nd in pre-snap motion?
Probably Houston.
That juggernaut offense. Man. Do you think it'll get better,
vanilla.
Jacob? Do you think do you have faith in them?
It's very vanilla. Isn't that the craziest part? He was supposed to bring this like crazy system to the NFL that was perfect for Kyler Murray, and it's the most vanilla offense basically in football.
Yeah, it's gross. He has the third lowest average depth of target, which could easily be the second lowest if Daniel Jones has an A dot above 6 today.
I'll take the under. They're not throwing downfield. This is one of the least explosive offenses in football so far. They have not scored a point in the first quarter. They have one touchdown in the first half through 3 games. There are seven teams this year that don't have a 40-yard pass play. Listen to the other 6. One of them is the Rams, which is surprising. The Colts, Steelers, Seahawks, Browns, Falcons. Right? That makes sense. Rams and Cardinals. I want to double check on the Rams, by the way, not being on there, because I feel like, how do they not have one? But the Cardinals definitely don't. The Cardinals, longest play, they have a run of 30 yards and a pass of 30 yards. As Jacob mentioned, they're not throwing the ball downfield. The ADOT's way down for Kyler, for Marquise Brown. The question is, will the combination of DeAndre Hopkins in 3 more weeks, after 3 more weeks, and eventually Rondale Moore solve these problems, or these season-long problems?
Hopefully. It's amazing to me they haven't been able to get Trey McBride more involved in this offense. They go up and they spend a premium pick to get him. He's a receiving first option. And you have every injury in the world to your receiving options, and he's just not involved right now either. It's like this offense operates through Zach Ertz and Marquise Brown. Marquise Brown's a pretty good receiver. Zach Ertz is decent at getting open, I guess, but offers nothing after the catch. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, the Rams also do not have a 40-yard pass play. Very surprising.
That is surprising.
All right, well, Kyler had been good for fantasy because of these heroic fourth quarters. Each of the first 2 weeks, he does not come through. His next games are Carolina, Philadelphia, Seattle, New Orleans, Minnesota, Seattle. So there's a mixture of good matchups and bad matchups, and I think you're pretty much just going to start him. He's the entire offense. We could talk about Connor. Do you guys think Connor is a must start?
He looked really bad this week. I don't know if I trust his health.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, I think, tough. Jacob's right there.
All right, this is from Eric MB. Eric MB.
I thought you might have gone one time without it.
Nope.
You were so close.
Is Chris Olave this year's Ja'Marr Chase?
Yeah, I've got some fun stats on Olave. It's mostly just about air yardage, but really it's kind of unprecedented what we've seen. So he has 536 air yards through 3 weeks. The next highest in the NFL is 376 for Mark Andrews.
Wow.
And really, it's he brings this really unique combination of being able to draw targets at a decent rate, 26.4% target per route run rate. That's probably going to drop. But the fact that it's even above 20% when he has an average depth of target of 18.5 yards is just going to result in massive air yards. And that's what we've seen so far. And so over the past 10 seasons, here are the air yardage leaders through week three and followed by their fantasy finish that year. So what they went on to do after having this really hot start in this specific stat, air yards. 566 for Calvin Johnson, finishes the wide receiver 15 in 13 games. 560 for Calvin Ridley in 2020, finishes the wide receiver 5. 548 for Julio Jones, finishes wide receiver 4. 537 for Mike Evans, wide receiver 3. 536 for Jeremy Maclin, wide receiver 9. Chris Olave has 536. So everyone we've seen there has been a top 10 fantasy.
Wow. Not,
yeah, I don't know
Calvin, Calvin probably was per game.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know if that, you know, means that Chris Olave is going to. Obviously, this is a lot of this is just boosted by that one crazy game in week two. But still, that's a pretty crazy list.
I got another stat for you here. I got a Gibbsy stat for you here. Mm-hmm. Getting Gibbsy.
Gibbsy with it.
Target per route run with Michael Thomas on the field, 24.7%. Target per route run. With Michael Thomas off the field, 33.3% target per route run rate. So we'll see if Michael Thomas apparently and Jarvis Landry don't have serious injuries. I do hope they're back this week, but even more targets can be expected if Michael Thomas is out. And our last one. All right, wait, I'm sorry. Let me wrap it up with Chris Olave here. Is he your favorite rookie wide receiver, or is it still Drake London or Garrett Wilson or Jahan Dotson?
I mean, it's clearly London is the one.
It's still London for me, yeah.
Yeah. I think you can make a case for him over Garrett Wilson. Like this is really exciting if he's able to continue to draw targets anywhere near this rate on such a deep route tree.
And he's only 79% rostered, 13% started for Chris Olave.
Wow.
So that's, you know, that's going to go up. And let's go to our last topic here from The Real Matty S. Weighing productive end of bench spots with potential breakout rookies. Who do you put at the end of your bench, Schneier? Do you put James Cook, the potential breakout rookie, or Sterling Shepard, the boring veteran who's productive?
Yeah, I'm always swinging for upside. I would always keep a guy like Cook over a player like Sterling Shepard, depending on the complexion of your roster and your league settings, of course. I still have to consider. If you have short benches and injured starters, you don't really have an option to hold on to guys like Cook. But in a deeper league with a deeper bench and a healthy starting lineup, there are players. Cook wouldn't be the top for me right now. I think the top would be Jameson Williams. And I think there are a few others that come to mind. Rondell Moore is a player who I definitely am looking to stash right now, given the role we've seen from Greg Dortch. That is going to be Moore's role at some point, and he has a lot more talent to take off with it. So those would be two names that come before James Cook for me, but definitely looking to stash upside over boring veterans.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody. We do appreciate your time on this Monday. And we'll see you at the Giants game tonight. Dan and I are going to not wear white, even though we're supposed to wear white. It's ridiculous.
I will buy white if there's a guy in the parking lot selling those white shirts, which there typically is. I will buy that shirt. We'll add
that's an interesting con. No, I don't think I will. I bought this shirt that I'm wearing. I bought it a few weeks ago for the season. I'm not going to not wear it at the game. Like, it's, why couldn't we blue out? Why did it be a white out?
It should have been a blue out. The white out was a terrible idea. The Cowboys visiting team is a white. Is a team that wears white.
That's the other thing, right? They're giving us white towels. You know, we're getting towels today. We're going to have to
wave the towel. Love the towels.
Yeah. All right. So I see Pierre is going to be at the game in our YouTube chat. Pierre, hit me up on, reply to my thread on, my tweet, reply to my tweet, and I'll try to meet up with some listeners today. I'm sure I'll be able to spot Dan's very average hair from across the parking lot, so I'll be tailgating with him.
Not even comparable.
And that's it for us, everybody. Take care. See ya.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.